anchor.fm/Kickstarter.
This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up next at 9 o'clock, it's One Land, Many Voices discussing pinkwashing in Seattle, Portland, and Toronto. At 10 on Valley Views, Dale looks into OSU's plans for demolishing the Sunflower House. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, Pacific Underground talks to filmmaker and Slants band member Joek Jang about his Jade District stories, exploring the businesses and people with deep roots in the area. KBOO's Kickstarter is live. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter and help KBOO build a city of media makers. That's kboo.fm/Kickstarter. And coming up now, it's One Land, Many Voices.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Community radio is for the people, by the people. At KBOO, your neighbors, coworkers, and friends make radio so you can be sure that the issues they bring to you are the issues that matter. We believe that strong communities invest in sharing knowledge with each other. Every month, KBOO offers free classes in the art of radio broadcasting so Portland can stay informed. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
صباح الخير يا ولاد عمومنا تفضلوا شرفونا شو بتحب مضيفكم دم عربي ولا دموع من عيوننا بعتقد هيك تأملوا نستقبل من هيك تعقدوا لما تدركموا على غلطة من
هيك لبسنا الكوفي
البيضة والسودة صاروا تلعب الزمان يلبسوها كمودة مهما تفننوا فيها مهما غيروا بلونها كوفية عربية بتضل عربية حطتنا بدنا إياه ثقافتنا بدنا إياه كرامتنا بدنا إياه كل شي إلنا بدنا إياه ما رح نسكت لن نسمح لن ليك ليك لا بقلن
يسرقوا شغلي مش إلهن ما خصن فيه
هلدونا
بلتبس لبس
هالأرض
بتكفيهن
طمعانين
عالقدس قدس
اعرفوا كيف
تكونوا بشر عربي إلنا بتلبسوا كوفي
جينا نذكرن مين إحنا وغصب عن أبوهم هي حطتنا
من هيك لبسنا الكوفي
لأنها وطنية
الكوفي الكوفي عربي من هيك لبسنا الكوفي
هويتنا الأساسية
الكوفي الكوفي عربي
This is One Land Many Voices for Friday, February 23rd, 2018. One Land Many Voices is a show produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland that focuses on Israel and Palestine. Today's show is on the issue of pinkwashing. Dean Spade, the Seattle-based producer of the film Pinkwashing Exposed, Seattle Fights Back, describes pinkwashing as a term used by activists to describe an explicit strategy taken up in recent years by the government of Israel to portray Israel as a leader in gay rights and a gay tourism destination as a way to deflect attention away from the extreme violence of the Israeli occupation of Palestine. We go now to an excerpt from the film that includes an explanation of how Israel uses pinkwashing.
Basically, there is a campaign on the part of Israel called Brand Israel, which is a campaign to project Israel as a culturally vibrant, hip, modern, cool country. Has actually come up with this campaign, Brand Israel, in direct response to the fact that thanks to decades of education on the part of people who realize that Israel actually is not the amazingly wonderful democratic country that it is a settler colonial state founded on the genocide of the Palestinian people, and it maintains its power through a system of apartheid and discrimination against the Palestinian people. So that truth is actually coming out. In 2005, 170 civil society organizations came together and issued this call based on the South African call for a global solidarity movement in the form of boycott, saying, if you want to support the Palestinian people, this is the strategy that we would like you to engage in. Boycott Israeli goods, divest from companies that profit from the Israeli occupation, and call for sanctions on Israel until it abides by international law. And so in response to Israel's tarnished image, Israel has come up with this campaign, Brand Israel, which is very actively trying to fix Israel's image.
As part of that rebranding, Israel is putting money and resources towards what activists that I'm involved with call a pinkwashing campaign, which is a campaign to promote the image that Israel is a safe haven for gay and lesbian people and a great anti-homophobic place. So it's done that by funding films that promote those ideas and sending them to film festivals in the United States. It funds panels of gay and lesbian rights activists and leaders to go around the United States and give talks about how forward-thinking Israel is, how innovative Israel is on gay and lesbian rights issues.
There's certain things I've noticed that help me spot the propaganda, right? So one obvious thing is that it might be funded directly by the government through the consulate or another source. Are there particular images used that kind of promote an idea that Israel is a safe haven or a Mecca? One example I often see is a rainbow-flagged Israeli flag, or these two flags kind of coming together and overlapping, that there might not be words listed, but I know what the image is trying to tell me.
Pinkwashing also, it has a number of tropes, but sort of they're very recycled. Once you start to see the films and speakers across the board, they're kind of saying the same thing every time. So that's also one way we can discern what is it about. So things that they will say are, Israel is the only safe place for gay people in the Middle East, right? There's often the terrible use of the term Mecca to say it's a gay Mecca. There's often a glamorous painting of the Tel Aviv nightlife as a sort of like gay tourism destination that would be a wonderful place to visit. Just be careful of the scary homophobic Arabs outside of Israel's borders.
The point of this is not to protect LGBT people, right? Like, in reality, there's immense homophobia in Israel and the United States. I mean, I don't know of a country that doesn't have serious problems with homophobia and transphobia. But the point of this is propaganda for Israel to cover over its brutal, brutal apartheid regime.
There are four commissions that are staffed out of the Office for Civil Rights, and one of them is the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Commission. And commissions serve in an advisory role. And so any issues that pertain to the LGBT community, the commission is there to provide advice to the mayor and city council and department directors.
The Seattle LGBT Commission was going to be hosting an event where a delegation would be able to speak about gay rights in Israel and their progressivism.
I was concerned because a lot of local organizations, some of which I care about or have a connection to, were going to do these events, and probably they're just thinking, oh, cool, we get to do an event with international speakers. We don't have to pay anyone to fly. Like, this is a great opportunity to learn something. So I wrote an open letter to the LGBT Commission of Seattle. I felt like I really wanted them to know what they were getting into. The commission publicly posted a response to my letter. The Seattle LGBT Commission values the comments of Dean Spade, who recently brought to our attention the concerns of the Israeli and Palestinian conflict and agenda of pinkwashing to cover up said crimes and corruption of the Israeli government. While we believe his concerns are valid, the purpose of the meeting with Israeli LGBT groups is to engage in a dialogue about their successes and the progress of LGBTQ people's rights in Israel and Seattle.
If ever we were going to get the event actually canceled, which of course is the high-level goal whenever you're trying to interrupt an event that you think is, you know, politically damaging because it's going to tell a lie, you know, you want to actually not have that happen. And so we were like, okay, I was like, we got to go. This is our chance. Let's get a group together. Let's make it happen. It felt really right that we go and that we, you know, on public record, because this was an event being held, you know, ostensibly for us as queer Seattleites, to be on the record as such saying no.
You've been listening to an excerpt from the film Pinkwashing Exposed. You can watch the whole film for free online at pinkwashingexposed.net. The film was shown earlier this month at Portland State University. Following the film screening was a discussion, which we bring to you now. It begins with Jonathan, a queer Jewish activist in Portland, talking about their first trip to Palestine. They're followed by Chris, a gay Palestinian Portlander, who shares his experience with the Portland Gay Men's Chorus.
The reason I went was because I wanted to volunteer with International Solidarity Movement, which a number of people, which is a, at this point, I think, on its 15th or 16th year of supporting Palestinian civil society groups and resisting all of the myriad forms of genocide perpetrated on them by the state of Israel, its military, and settlements. I also had the opportunity of showing up with and interviewing and befriending a number, a lot of Palestinian, some Jewish Israeli, anti-occupation activists, and other internationals who are all there to kind of work in this capacity. And a lot of people, surprisingly, are queer. One friend in particular I want to kind of bring into the room who passed due to illness, but I'm sure that illness didn't benefit from, you know, thousands of tear gas canisters. Renan Raz is he's Mizrahi, which means he's a Middle Eastern Jew. I don't know his origin or descent, whether he's Palestinian or whether he's from some other part of that land. He was a character. He's a beautiful person. And he persuaded and boycott from within. A lot of gay shame protests of pride marches that would happen in Tel Aviv or other parts. And he also took me to pick up spots in Uds and Jaffa, or Jerusalem and Tel Aviv area. They're not exactly the same, but one occupied the other. He pointed out, were all built on top of Palestinian cemeteries. And that's one way in which I think a detail that is left out of the popular marketing of Tel Aviv is completely taken out of context back for queer people. So that was the thing that kind of stuck with me. He also spoke of a lot of personal relationships he would have with he would, like many other people, with Anarchists Against the Wall, which is a largely Jewish Israeli but not exclusively anti-occupation group. Built a lot of relationships in a lot more selective way than ISM can because of the occupied nature of being Israeli with certain communities and the relationships he built with other people who, and you know, to the point where he never, you know, there's this misrepresentation of Palestinian civil society and Muslim queerphobia, all those things exist everywhere, and certainly occupation doesn't help. And actually, you know, war and oppression make everything, all other kinds of social ills worse, you know, violence against women, all those pieces. Most of my time when I was in Palestine, I went wherever ISM wanted me, and then I would occasionally try to give workshops and things because I teach first aid, and that's another thing I do. I spent a lot of time in Al-Khalil, or what is sometimes called Hebron, which is one of the saddest places I've ever been. For those of you who've been there, probably speak to it better than I, but what I observed while I was there is a city that is surrounded by, literally topped by, settlements of, like, the most violent and abhorrent settlers, and, like, who are largely from the U.S., by the way, as well as defended by large numbers of soldiers, usually the most, like, violent and big and scary soldiers. In this case, it was the Golani Regiment when I was there. And you can see that bear out and how, like, that affects people, right? Like, in most parts of Palestine, I have no judgment on people begging, but oftentimes, usually people don't. And, like, usually harassment of women doesn't happen, at least from what I have seen. Again, this is all from my position. But, you know, those things happen there in a, like, more visible way, and I think it makes sense, because when people are living under that degree of oppression and violence, it's really hard to, like, hold true to the things that, you know, that give you meaning. And that said, there's, like, there are a million amazing activists in that area, you know, Youth Against Settlements and the Palestinian Medical Relief Societies and Women's Centers and, like, many other really amazing groups there. And, like, the Women's Center, I would kind of understand, was also, like, a queer center. It just wasn't, like, as public in the same way as, like, might be in other places. But if occupation, you know, land and resource theft, detention, casual violence, apartheid, and genocide really don't make for improved safety for queer people, regardless of what your views are of safety for queer people anywhere in the world. And even if they did, that wouldn't be a bargain worth considering. I guess I wanted to, the other reason why I wanted to speak is I just want to kind of share the offer I got, which was, you know, in time and experience, and in the case of the other stuff, like money, and to support other people who might be thinking of volunteering either with ISM or with other international support or solidarity groups, or certainly any Palestinian people living in diaspora who want to go visit home if they have a way of doing that, which can be very, very difficult. I would love to support that.
Actually, I do. I since I am gay and in Portland, or just wanted to let people know that I was a member of the Portland Gay Men's Chorus. I was doesn't end happily. Sort of the lead baritone at the time. They decided to do a number called "The Sky Over the Skies of Israel," written by a Seattleite. And I complained. I said, you can do, you know, we're doing other Jewish numbers, so it has nothing to do with Judaism. It has to do with a place. And it was a national, you know, the refugees in gathering after thousands of years. It was a it was not about Judaism. It was racism. It was a nationalist number. And I went to them and I said, look, this is not about Judaism, this is about nationalism. You could write any nationalism. I even changed the words for them if you said, you know, whites. Mm-hmm. Flagrantly violated. I got a letter 2 weeks later that I had never auditioned for the choir, which I didn't because I was a lead baritone in a choir, and they asked me to leave. Because I had asked them. And so they basically have a policy of being, of course, affirming and, you know, rights. But I kept the letters between back and forth. And I said, we have happened maybe 10 years ago. But the main thing is that here in Portland, as in Seattle, if you basically hold, what spoke to me in the movie is that there was this backlash. We live in a town, we're still, you know, the Portland Gay Men's Chorus is almost exclusively white. It's like 95%, that would be charitable, maybe 98%. And that they asked a person of color to leave, right? There was no, I said, do I have a right of rebuttal? Do I have a right to speak to you guys? Do I have a right to petition? Can we discuss the lyrics of the song? Why cannot another Hanukkah song be, this is nationalism, it's not Judaism? right? This is over the skies. It's not, has nothing to do. It's not Israel the people. It's Israel the country. And so all I'm asking is people here to consider that what you saw in the movie, without, I'm not, at the time wasn't, I'm not an activist in that kind of way, but I was just a member of a gay organization that had chosen to do a nationalistic song that was very clearly erased the national identity of another people who had been living there. And all I wanted to say is that it happens here in Portland. Yeah. And there is a sense that there's a sense of powerlessness, right? Because they wouldn't even let me talk to them. And the sense is that, yeah, what you see, what I saw being with the activists, you know, where the person who's being victimized gets erased. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's painful because I still do a lot of singing and still very active musically. But, you know, every time I'm still on their web, you know, they have this big thing where we, you know, it's right on their main page, our mission statement. Mm-hmm. is to provide an open space where diversity and where different people can come and feel people from the margins can be brought in and all this kind of stuff. But it's a reality, and I just wanted to share that and let people know that we do have gay organizations like the GLBT organizations in Seattle, which will turn a gay Palestinian out of an organization for merely saying that the skies of over Israel, which is the name of the song, is not an appropriate piece to be doing, and should be substituted with another religious. You know, I was happy to, you know, that was one of the things that I saw in the movie, which made me laugh because I like collective memory.
So they appreciate minority.
Because I knew some of the board members who. As I said, I'm pretty active musically, and I had been sort of, there was lead baritone in the Unitarian, I don't want to get too detailed, but I was lead baritone in the Unitarian Choir, which is one of the best in the city, and it's a professional choir, and so being in the gay men's chorus, which is not professional, it wasn't even, he laughed when he said, when I had said, you want me to audition during the, because you're, we know who you are, come and lead our baritone section. And then if... within months being so, oh, well, you didn't audition, now you need to go.
Wow.
So, you know, it's shocking because it was sort of like, even the week before I was asked to leave, he had pointed, because they don't have to read music, he had pointed to me, said, the section, follow him. Because, you know, there's like people in each section,
mm-hmm.
you know, who generally can read sight read. And it was just sort of like, so it was clearly racism.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens here in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why I kind of came out to see the film tonight. I actually was thinking it was on the mayor of Seattle. But it affected me because it happens here in Portland, and we just need to be aware and to put pressure on the organizations, such as the Gay Men's Chorus, which still have the same leadership and just need to be told that, you know, you can't go around saying you're an open space for diversity and welcomingness and bringing in people from the margins when I have the letters to show what happened and the witnesses within the choir who came to me all publicly and said, you know, it was sort of like, you know, you feel.
Do you feel that there were any external organizations that pressured the Portland Gay Men's Chorus?
I do know this, just as a positive statement. I do know that there was a vote of 6 people in the choir. 5 voted to push me out, and the one who didn't was the only Jewish member.
Oh, wow.
Because he's the one who approached me. He just says, well, I was told what the conversation was. I don't want to go into details, but they were basically saying exactly what they said in the mill. I'm politicizing something that should not be that the skies over Israel is not a political song, and that I was the one who was bringing the problem. And he saw, as a Jewish person, that it was a political statement.
It's definitely not the last racist song that's been sung.
Yeah, so it is what it is.
I left them.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Annie Rose, here. I'm wondering from your all's experience if this is a case where organizations like the Gay Men's Choir think they're standing up for Jews. Do they think that they are standing up for all of us? And they are they, and because, you know, I loved what Dean said, where it's like, this is a government.
Right.
We need to criticize governments.
Right.
That is healthy to criticize governments.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they do terrible things.
Right, that's true.
And I see that, you know, in so much of my Jewish community and in all communities, it's like, oh, Israel and Judaism are the same thing. So I'm wondering, like, do these organizations think that they're supporting us? I mean, supporting Jews. Like, I don't know what
I was not going to speak about the organizations, but I was going to say that this is something that happens all the time. Like, it is not something that is special or specific for this case. And regarding what you said, we are taking this class with United Oregon, and you are not a good token minority person. You are a minority person who chose to speak up. You just said, oh, I have an objection. Like, you just criticized one thing, and that put you out of your place because you were there for them to fill a role. They needed a minority for them in that board, and you were that minority. How dare you speak? So,
yes, that's actually kind of what I think happens. People, as you, I think you just said, I think it's an important point to bring up. I don't want to take up too much time, but if you are a minority, not just in Palestine, Israel, but just in general, in Portland, it is essential that as long as you fulfill the role, a quiet role, a supportive, that means you can object, but only within the bounds that white people tell you to that you can object. And if you go outside of that, which I clearly did, I said, you know, you shouldn't sing this song. It's not. It's against your own mission. And I said it nicely, probably even a lot nicer. I was trying to be as nice as I could. And yeah, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's not rare.
I was going to say, so most of the folks, I know most of you here in the room, and a lot of you are familiar with the BDS movement here in Portland, which I've been a part of for close to 8 years. What I wanted to bring up is one of the things that happened locally at PSU, where the student government decided to, I think it was unanimously, except for one or two Zionist students, support the BDS resolution that we brought, 5 years of work. What was particularly interesting, and I also saw this play at the city council, one of the things that the BDS movement has done very, very well is that it has articulated globally for people exactly what is happening. And we use the language of talking about the government itself and making the distinctions between Judaism and Zionism, right? And we talk about the policies. We don't hit below the belt and talk about the people and make character assassinations and talk in racist, vile terms. However, what we saw play out and what won the day for the BDS movement at PSU was that when the Palestinian students were giving testimony, and then some of others us who have been involved in the movement, were talking specifically about government policies and oppression of people by a government, right, that is supported by the US dollar, tax dollars, all of these things, making those very sharp political arguments, all the other side could do was bring racist, vile, nasty language, which was really, I mean, I don't even know how my Palestinian comrades could sit there and listen to that, because it was just it got really disgusting. And that won the day for our victory, because the whatever senator was sitting on the fence who had been bribed on the side by the Zionist students, giving them trips, doing all kinds of nasty stuff on the side, they heard that. They saw that. And us holding the ethical line by holding the government accountable by our sharp analysis of policies and not about the people, we won that victory.
You've been listening to a discussion about pinkwashing held at Portland State University earlier this month. On the second half of the program, it's Queer Review, featuring a discussion with Tony Souza on the work of Queers Against Israeli Apartheid in Toronto. After this program airs, it will be available for listening and sharing on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/onelandmanyvoices. Please share this program on social media, and don't forget to support KBOO's Kickstarter campaign. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter for more information.
الاثري الصورة واضحة نحنا مهد الحضارة تاريخنا وتراثنا الشاهد على وجودنا من هيك لبست الثوب الفلسطيني من حفا جنين جبل النار إلى رام الله خليني شوف الكوفية البيضة والحمرة خلينا نعليها لفوق بالسما أنا هجاه دية العرب الثاني بخص غزة الثاني بهز هزكلي ماتي حرب سجل أنا شادي منصور والحطة هويتي من يوم ما خلقت سيدي والشعب مسؤوليتي لك أنا تربيت بين الغرب وبين الشرب بين لغتين بين بخيل بين فقير شفت الحياة من الشقتين أنا مثل الكوفية كيف ما لبستوني وين ما شلحتوني بدلني عأصولي فلسطينية من هيك لبسنا الكوفية لأنها وطنية الكوفية كوفية عربية من هيك لبسنا الكوفية هويتنا الأساسية الكوفية كوفية عربية يلا علي الكوفية علولي هالكوفية الكوفية كوفية عربية علوه هلا بلاد الشام كوفية عربية بدل عربية عربية من هيك لبسنا الكوفية لأننا وطنية الكوفية كوفية عربية من هيك لبسنا الكوفية هويتنا الأساسية الكوفية كوفية عربية يلا علي الكوفية علولي هالكوفية الكوفية كوفية عربية علوه هلا بلاد الشام كوفية عربية بدل عربية
Some of y'all think it's a trend, a fashion statement. Disgustingly, I spit on the pavement. It's basic. Y'all know I bang for my flag. My bandana ain't no rag. The kafia ain't no scarf. It's a part of the movement. The symbolism is resistance. No coincidence that you can see the RBG in it. Cable meet the bandera. Ain't it beautiful? I say it in Spanish. In solidarity, the feelings is mutual. Meanwhile, hide, that's M1 in Arabic. I'm pro-Falastini. Tie that thing around your head and ride. Wave it in the air and let me know what side you want. Uhuru. Yeah. The kufi is Arab. Yeah. It's M1 in solidarity. Feel me, Shaja. Do it. From the ghetto to Gaza. I keep it RBG up.
I call you, ladies and gentlemen. You know what you are. For the first time on any screen, there lies stories of women who love women and men that love men. See their side. Hear them out. Don't have a closed mind. Be open before making your decision. See gay liberation. Every family with relatives is involved. Out of the closet and into the street. Gay liberation.
You are listening to Queer Review on CHRW 94.9. Happy to welcome our guest today, Tony Souza, a longtime activist and a current member of Queers Against Israeli Apartheid, which is based out of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. How do you do?
Hi. Good to be here.
Great. I wanted to ask you right away, so people get an understanding of where you're coming from. What is the organization, Queers Against Israeli Apartheid?
Queers Against Israeli Apartheid are people, queer people who have come together to work in solidarity and to support the queers who live in Palestine and the Palestine Solidarity Movement around the world. We actually are in response to queers in Palestine and people who live in the occupied territories who ask us to support them in their struggle for basic human rights.
Now, I've never heard of LGBT groups in Palestine, and I visited your website, and there are a few. Do you know much about these groups, and are these the groups that you're talking about?
These are some of the groups that we're involved in. Several of our members have actually lived in the occupied territories and have visited the occupied territories, and so they know these groups, and so we really are supporting these groups. So we've met these people, and one of them came over last year, actually, for Gay Pride Day.
Could you tell me a little bit about what the nature of their work is?
The nature of their work is basically supporting gays, queer people in, and transgender people in Palestine and the occupied territories. And basically providing a space for them so they can be queer. And also, but at the same time, I think it's really important to realize that they can't, that these, that it, there's no point in having queer rights when you don't have basic human rights. And Palestinians who live in the occupied territories have absolutely no rights at all. So, you know, there's, they're stateless people. There are more than six million people who have no passports, have no rights, have no freedom of movement, nothing.
Now, some of the organizations there is ASWAT, I believe, yes, and Al-Kawas for Sexual and Gender Diversity in Palestine Society, yes, is the group. So check those out online if you're interested more specifically what they're doing. I wanted to also talk about, introduce the idea of Israeli apartheid and essentially why your organization exists. What is this term apartheid? It's been used for decades now, but a lot of people still don't know what it means. What exactly does that mean, and what does that mean in relation to Israel?
The term comes from a term that was used in South Africa, and it was in 1948, the South African government, after it separated from Great Britain, got its independence and formed an apartheid state. And basically, apartheid means difference. It's an Afrikaans word, which means separation. And basically, what it means is that there are two sort of laws and two rights that people have. There's one group of people have much more rights and much more privileges and everything else than another. So it comes from South Africa, and it has been used in South Africa till 1989, when the apartheid state fell in South Africa.
I understand that this apartheid comes in all sorts of different forms. You've got an 8-meter concrete wall surrounding two areas in Palestine. You've got checkpoints where people are constantly being racially profiled to get in and out of East Jerusalem and all sorts of places. Basically, any movement at all. You've got the waters and air under complete siege. The Israeli government controls the ports and the airspace and most of the resources. So there's essentially, you've got a complete military siege and occupation of the Palestinian people. Is that correct?
That's right. And basically what it is, the United Nations have said is that apartheid are inhuman acts committed for the purpose of establishing and maintaining domination by one racial group of people over another racial group of people and systematically oppressing them. So this is something that the UN came up with in terms of defining the term, and you know, people all over the world and very noted public figures have come out and said, what you see in Israel is apartheid, where the Jewish people of Israel have many more rights than the Arab people or the Palestinians,
right,
who live there. And of course, the people who live in the occupied territories on the West Bank and in Gaza have no rights at all, and they don't, you know, they're stateless people, and they've been that way. So they have no freedom of movement, nothing.
So your group is designed to, in part, combat this. In which ways can Queers Against Israeli Apartheid influence this situation, and what have you been doing concretely to try to do that?
Well, we have to go back to what's happening in Israel itself, and what's happening on the international scene. on the international scene, there's more and more criticism about Israel being an apartheid state and the fact that Palestinians have no rights and have been many of them have been refugees and were expelled in 1948 when the State of Israel was formed. So the people in the Arabs in Israel, for instance, have a very different set of rights to what the Jewish people have, and of course, as I say, the people in the occupied territories in Gaza have almost none, and live almost as if they're in prisons. As this criticism has developed, and as this criticism has grown internationally, the Israeli government has decided that it needs to do a PR campaign to take away this criticism, to paint them in a better light. And what it is now sort of hooked onto is the whole gay and lesbian and queer issues, and the fact that in Israel there are gay rights, there are gay bars, there are places where queer people can go. They also have gay marriage. So they're promoting it as this sort of gay mecca, this queer mecca in the Middle East. Now, what they are not talking about is talking about what about queer Palestinians? What about queer Arabs who live in Israel? Do they have the same rights as Israeli Jewish queers? No, they don't. And so what we've been asked to do is to try to bring attention to this fact and to try to bring some change, pressure governments to try to pressure Israel to change this, to start giving equal rights to Arabs and Palestinians. So they have a campaign the queer community has named as pinkwashing, which is basically that, you know, come to Israel, come to this wonderful land of, you know, where we all have our rights. Well, it does not, for instance, say that these rights, that these wonderful queer rights that people have in Palestine, and let me tell you, there are also there's opposition to queers in Palestine, in Israel, just as there are to queers here. But be that as it may, but queers who are Arab and queers who are Palestinian do not have these rights, and it's we don't want them to be using the gay the queer gay or queer rights as a way of diverting attention from what's happening to Palestinians.
Before we get into the Pride Festival, what other types of things does Queers Against Israeli Apartheid do to spread information?
Well, we do educational work. So we do workshops, we talk to people, and we join other struggles who are trying to get rights for the Palestinian people. And the other more important thing is right now we're supporting a campaign which is called Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. It's called BDS, and it's again organized by Palestinians and Palestinians who have asked us to help them. And one of the things they've targeted is gay tourism.
What has been the response from your critics to your work?
They don't like the idea that people are questioning and criticizing the State of Israel. So they attack us, and they attack us as being anti-Semitic, they attack us as promoting hate, and this is what led to us being banned last year from Pride Parade.
Could you please tell me a bit about the history of Queers Against Israeli Apartheid?
People have been marching in the Pride Parade in support of other international issues. So, for instance, in the 80s, we marched in solidarity with South African queers to bring attention to apartheid. So, you know, and that in some ways was very helpful to the South Africans. Again, it was their request that we do this, that we bring attention to the fact that blacks and colored people in South Africa were not, you know, did not have any rights. And so we brought somebody actually from South Africa here to speak and do some educationals to people around the issue of apartheid in South Africa. So, and similarly, there, you know, there have been other issues around gay, lesbian, transgender, queer groups around the world who have asked, you know, have asked activists if they would do something to support them, either by through education or through and through some action and through some political lobbying. So that's what we've done in the past. So a few years ago, I think it was formed around 2008. A group of local activists were quite concerned about the use of gay rights to justify the Israeli government's occupation of Palestine and the apartheid policies towards the Palestinian people. So so they got formed in 2008, and I think in 2009 there was a contingent at the parade. And again, I want to draw attention that this was in response to the pinkwashing campaign that the state of Israel was doing, right? Because what it was, as I said earlier, was that it was the use of using gender, sexual, and gay rights to validate the state and detract it from the violation of human rights that it does. So what happened was, it was formed in 2008. In 2009, they were first banned, and then they were unbanned because there was an article in the National Post that announced, you know, that the group was banned. So there was a lot of there was an outcry at that time. This was not last year, 2010. This was 2009. This was as a result of an Israeli lobby.
Now, you were banned within the organization of the Toronto Pride Festival.
In 2010, right. In 2009, there was a move to try to censor choir, but it didn't work. But by March of last year, which is 2010, choir was sort of under attack by the councillors, by the city, and the city said that, you know, Pride funding would be at risk if choir was not banned. What they said was basically that Israeli apartheid constitutes hate speech, and it created a place where people were unsafe or unwelcome. So what happened was that they talked to Pride and the board of Pride in May of 2010 said that we couldn't use the word apartheid at all, that using the word apartheid was hate speech. When that happened, a lot of community groups mobilized very quickly and launched a campaign and formed an organization called Pride Coalition for Free Speech to compel Pride to reverse decisions. 20 or 25 former Pride honorees, people who had got awards from Toronto Pride, gave back their awards, and there was a tremendous opposition to Pride censorship, and also Pride was beginning to get really worried because they were scared of, you know, any kind of things that might happen in the parade where people might openly defy the ban. So when they realized that there was such an outcry, Pride reversed their decision on about a week before Gay Pride last year, and they said we could march. And since then, I think it's really important to note that the city manager has come back with a report that says Queers Against Israeli Apartheid do not promote hate, and the words are not hateful, it is a criticism of the Israeli state, but it is not in any way, you know, anti-Semitic or anything like that. So the city manager has said, you can't use that as an excuse to fund Pride. Now, with the change in at City Hall now, with Mayor Ford, who says, you know, who's been trying to find an excuse not to fund Pride. So what he did was, he said, if this group participates in Pride, then we won't give you any funding. So that's where it stands right now, and we decided we would call their bluff. We don't want to be used as the scapegoat, so we just said, well, we won't march this year. We marched last year, we marched the year before. The issue of Israeli apartheid is now quite known, and so we've done some sort of educational work in terms of spreading the message about what Israeli apartheid is and how queers in Palestine and Israel are oppressed. So we've done that. So we decided we won't play that game. So here we are now, sort of before the next Pride, telling the city, well, sorry, we won't be the excuse you have. So now they say, if anything about Israeli apartheid, in anything, that you can't give out information, you can't give out flyers, you can't wear T-shirts, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, this is getting totally ridiculous, because even their own managers have, as I said earlier, even their own managers have come out and said this is not hate speech, and criticism of a government is not necessarily hate. I mean, against a particular group of people. Because people were against apartheid in South Africa, didn't make them hate white people. So why does it make them us? Why does it seem that it's making us hate Jewish people?
Yeah, it's a pretty shocking thing for the mayor of Toronto to say something like he'll take $100,000. Did he even have the ability himself to take away $100,000?
Well, if city council passes it.
Yeah. But that would
they
be.
Can do it. So he can, and right now he's got, you know, a significant number of people who support him on city council.
I see.
And the thing is that a lot of councillors are caught in this bind that if they support the Queers Against Israeli Apartheid, then they might be branded as anti-Semitic, right? So
right.
So they don't go there, and they don't want to be, you know, they don't want to touch this issue because it might in some way affect how people see them.
So what is the future for Queers Against Israeli Apartheid? What's on the horizon?
What we're going to be doing at the time is to draw attention to apartheid. So we'll be doing an educational piece and also we'll be launching this campaign, which is the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Against Israel campaign, and especially in response to the pinkwashing campaign, as I told you earlier, where they're encouraging gay tourism in Israel. So what we're saying is, look, folks, you need to know what the truth is about human rights in Israel.
People can get in contact with you or learn more about you. They can go to queersagainstisraeliapartheid.org.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. We have we've got a website, right?
Fantastic. Yeah, it's actually a very good website, very informative. Apartheid 101 is a great section explaining what apartheid is and trying to cut through some of the confusion and distortions about the issue. It's a fantastic website. Apartheid is APARTHEID.
EID, yep.
Apartheid. Well, thank you very much for talking with Tony Souza, a member of Queers Against Israeli Apartheid. Thank you very much for joining us today.
I hope this helped clarify some of these issues.
Absolutely, it did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Travesty. We can't even bury friends without the threat of
the military showing up to carry out the vendetta. A policy of extermination against an indigenous population that's been fighting for emancipation. We wanna end the violence and end the occupation. We wanna see defiance and deny us liberation. This is apartheid Palestine. The cyber fire gets showered from Israeli watchtowers. This is for Haifa. This is for Rafa. This is for Gaza. This is for Balata. This is for Tarek. This is for Bashar. This is for Mahmoud. This is for Tahir. This is for Fatma, who was only 7 as a man shot dead at school at the age of 11. What would you do if you were under occupation? Let them take your freedom and fight for liberation. Come on, call it the freedom fighters from the Intifada, fighting for freedom today as they might not be a tomorrow now. Call it the freedom fighters from the Intifada, fighting for freedom today as they might not be a tomorrow now. Give me liberty or death, cause I'd rather go out on my feet than on my knees when I take my last breath. If you don't get it, you don't get it. Fighting Zionist oppression doesn't make you anti-Semitic. They say our people won't ever live as one. They say this fight won't ever be done. They say our rights can't ever be won. They say this war won't be undone. They said our people couldn't make it this far. I say they don't know who we are. They say a lot of things, but they only say that mess because they fear the change of organized power plays. We gotta keep it together so we can resist the pressure. Forever organizing to counter-repressing to endeavor to sever the main vein that helps us maintain a state. Standing a fight to make change. No mental tax dollars go to making people holler. Killing off our future scholars with the batchy helicopters. Time passed from this racist regime until it redeems the dreams of those that killed midstream. Time passed, time passed, time passed, time passed, time passed from Israel. From the IDF, top best, and let's lay a ball time to rest. Come on, only the freedom fighters of the Intifada fighting for freedom today, cause it might not be a tomorrow. Only the freedom fighters of the Intifada fighting for freedom today, cause it might not be a tomorrow. Only the freedom fighters, only the freedom fighters, only the freedom fighters, only the freedom fighters, only the freedom fighters of the Intifada fighting for freedom today, cause it might not be a tomorrow. Free, free.
You are listening to Queer Review in association with the Pride Library, located at the University of Western Ontario. To find out more or to listen online, visit queerreviewradio.blogspot.com.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 10 is Valley Views, where Dale looks into OSU's plans for demolishing the Sunflower House building. At 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11, Pacific Underground talks to filmmaker and Slants band member Joe X. Jang about his Jade District stories, exploring the businesses and people with deep roots in the area. KBOO's Kickstarter is live. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter and help KBOO build a city of media makers. That's kboo.fm/Kickstarter.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Michael Casehammer in concert on Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Newmark Theatre in Portland. Michael Casehammer, known mostly as Canadian jazz and boogie-woogie pianist and vocalist, will be performing with a 6-piece band touring for his 11th album called No Filter. Again, that's Michael Casehammer in concert on Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Newmark Theatre, 1111 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is building a city of media makers. We believe that strong, resilient communities know how to make their own media. For 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio. And we know that with our expertise and your support, we can keep a city activated and aware through radio we make together. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today.
Join us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 10 o'clock and time for Valley Views.
Hi, I'm Dale Holliday coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon in the bountiful Willamette Valley. Welcome to my show, Valley Views, a forum for sharing relevant topics relating to people and issues in the Willamette region. Good morning, people. I'm here today with Catherine Stearns, a part of an informal group working to enhance community livability around Oregon State University. And one of those issues is saving the Sunflower House, which currently houses the Multicultural Literacy Center. Good morning, Catherine, and welcome.
Good morning, Dale. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Nice to have you here. Well, let's start about telling us what exactly is the Sunflower House? What is that?
Well, as a structure, it's historic. It's been there over 100 years. It's the last remaining house of its type on the block, and it fits in with the current neighborhood. And it's on land owned by the state of Oregon and administered by OSU, and OSU wants to take down the house and put up student housing. Mm-hmm.